following is a production of the Media Ministry at New Salem Baptist Church in Soddy Daisy, Tennessee, featuring the teaching of Pastor Alan Rogers. In the Metro Chattanooga area, we invite you to be our guest at any of our weekly worship services or visit us online at newsalembaptist.net. Now here's Pastor Alan.
Johnny's friends dragged him down to the Miracle Crusade. During the altar call, while this big name evangelist had been preaching, Johnny had a lot of stuff going on and he felt really under conviction. So he made his way down to the front and he stood before that preacher, and the preacher looked at him and said, "What can I do for you today, brother?" And Johnny says, "I need you to pray for my hearing." So the evangelist grabbed him by the head and stuck his fingers in Johnny's ears, and he began to pray loudly and fervently, and he began to shake Johnny's head back and forth, and louder he got, and Johnny was starting to get a little dizzy. And with a loud amen, the preacher put his hands on Johnny's shoulders and said, "Brother, how's your hearing now?" And Johnny said, "I don't know. I don't go for the judge till next Wednesday." In our day, the term faith healer has a whole lot of different connotations, not all of them positive. But today, as we look at Mark chapter 5, verses 21 through 43, we're going to talk about a different kind of faith healer. In this passage, we're going to see Jesus respond to the faith of a couple of people who came to him in real desperation. And how Jesus responds tells us something very important about who Jesus really is. It also tells us some things about the nature of faith and about how Jesus can bring hope into hopeless situations. So if you've ever experienced hopelessness or discouragement, great news, you've come to the right place. Because in Mark chapter 5, we learn that Jesus hears cries of desperation. Join me as we read verses 21 through 24 here. "When Jesus had crossed over again in the boat to the other side, a large crowd gathered around him, and so he stayed by the seashore. One of the synagogue officials, named Jairus, came up, and on seeing him, he fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, 'My little daughter is at the point of death. Please come and lay your hands on her that she may get well and live.' And he went off with him, and a large crowd was following him and pressing in on him." So Mark shows us here Jesus and his entourage returning to the Jewish side of the Sea of Galilee. They're in the northern part of Israel. Previously in chapter 4, in the early part of chapter 5, we'd seen Jesus and his team cross over the water to the pagan side of the lake. And along the way, Jesus had done a couple of things that, to be honest, only God should be able to do. First of all, at the end of chapter 4, we see Jesus calm a turbulent storm with just a word. That's something only God can do. And while he's over in that godless territory, he's confronted by this man who's possessed by an army of demonic spirits. And Jesus commands those demonic spirits to leave that man and stop their torment. And they do. Again, something only God can do. And now Jesus and his team have come back across the lake to more familiar territory. And immediately, when people see he's back, they swarm against him. They're crowding in. This huge crowd comes to meet him, but Mark focuses on one single figure in that crowd. We're introduced to Jairus, who's an official at the local synagogue. Now, that means Jairus was a very important lay leader in the local Jewish community. He wasn't a rabbi, but he was responsible for the administration of the synagogue there in that town, including taking care of the building and managing the finances. He was also responsible for planning the worship services. He was the one who recruited people to teach and preach and to pray and to read the scriptures. Jairus was not only an influential and important man, he was also a very desperate man. We know he was desperate because he comes and he throws himself at Jesus' feet. Now, Jesus was a little bit of a controversial figure in that community. Sure, there were a lot of people who were drawn to him, but there were also quite a few who opposed him as well. In fact, we saw in Mark chapter 3, Mark tells us that some of the religious establishment had determined that Jesus was a threat, and they were actually conspiring with the political leadership to get rid of him. So a man in Jairus' position was taking a huge risk by approaching Jesus in this way. Have you ever been so desperate that you would risk everything to seek relief in order to seek God? That you'd do anything to see those problems go away? You know, it's long been said, people do not change until the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of change. You know, change is scary, right? Stepping out and doing something different, scary. It's unfamiliar. You know, there's no telling what could happen. Sometimes it's just more comfortable to just kind of sit and sulk in our pain. But we don't change, we don't get better until we're ready to step out in faith and address that pain of change. It's true of addicts, people who are addicted to drugs or alcohol or sex or any number of things. You won't get free of that addiction until the pain of staying the same, staying trapped in that, is greater than whatever pain you may face by trying to change. It's true of people facing obstacles in their personal lives. It's even true of churches. I've seen lots of churches that struggled. You know, they were so scared of change that they just kind of tried to maintain everything and hold on to it. And the tragedy is, whether it's a church or whether it's an individual or whether it's a family, some people wait too long to admit that reality and to seek help. There's another old saying that we've all heard. If you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to keep getting what you're getting. So until you're ready to step out in faith and take a risk, guess what? Nothing's really going to change. Jairus had apparently reached the end of his rope, and he was ready to try something really radical, like trust in Jesus. And the reason for Jairus' desperation involved his daughter. This man loved his daughter deeply. We know that because he calls her, in verse 23, his little daughter. Okay, even though we find out at the end of the story that she's about 12 years old, which in that culture was basically an adult. Okay, she was almost to the age of getting married off. Here's a little secret for those of you who, those of us who are dads of daughters, understand this. Okay, no matter how old they get, they're always your little girl. And this man loved his daughter deeply. But his daughter was deeply sick. In fact, we're told she is at the point of death. And Jairus believed Jesus had the answer to his daughter's need. He essentially asked Jesus to do what any rabbi would have done. Okay? Come to the house, lay his hands and pray. Like I've been asked to do as a pastor many, many times. Come to somebody's bedside and pray over them. The difference was Jairus believed Jesus' prayers might actually make a difference. Now remember, as a member of the religious establishment, Jairus could have asked any number of rabbis to come and pray over his daughter. He may have already done so. But instead, he risked his reputation and his position to go outside the normal channels and seek the help of Jesus. Jairus believed that if Jesus came, his little girl would get well and live. Actually, according to the Greek, what he actually said was that so that she may be saved and live. And here's the amazing, incredible thing. Jesus responded to his desperate faith. In verse 24, we're told Jesus went off with him. He said, let's go. Show me where your house is. And they headed off. The whole entourage is falling behind. They're heading to Jairus' house. In other words, Jesus set out with Jairus to go with the man's house and see his daughter. And much like when we come to God and we cry out in desperation, he hears us too. When we reach out to God in faith, he responds. Nearly 400 years earlier, when the city of Jerusalem was besieged by the Babylonian army, God had sent word through the prophet Jeremiah to the people to call out to him. In Jeremiah 33:3, call out to me and I will answer you. And I will tell you great and mighty things that you do not know. God invites his people to call out to him for help. Throughout the Gospels, Jesus calls out to us and says, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. Throughout the Scriptures, we're invited to take the hand of God and take the hand of God's Son and walk with him in faith. If we will say yes to the invitation, we can have the assurance that he hears. He knows. And he stretches out his hand to help. We may not always see clearly where he's leading us, but we can know we're not walking that path alone. Question for you this morning. Where is God reaching out to you this morning and inviting you to trust him, to walk out in faith with him? Jesus, the Son of God, responds to desperate faith. Jesus also responds to imperfect faith. In verse 25, we see an interruption in this story. So they're setting out toward Jairus' house, and all of a sudden a woman who had a hemorrhage for 12 years and had endured much at the hands of many physicians and had spent all that she had and was not helped at all, but rather had grown worse, after hearing about Jesus, she came up in the crowd behind him and touched his cloak. For she thought, if I just touch his garments, I will get well. Immediately the flow of her blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her affliction. Immediately Jesus, perceiving in himself that the power proceeding from him had gone forth, turned around to the crowd and asked, who touched my garments? And his disciples said to him, you see the crowd pressing in on you, and you say, who touched me? He looked around to see the woman who had done this. But the woman, fearing and trembling, aware of what had happened to her, came and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction. Now, as Mark often does, as one of his trademarks, Mark starts a story and then he interrupts that story with another story in the middle. That's what we've talked about before. It's called the Markan sandwich. Mark apparently does this in this case for several reasons. One, there's a pretty good chance this is the way things actually played out. So he's just describing the events as they occurred. But also, he could be using this secondary story to explain the time gap between when they left for Jairus' house and why it took him so long to get there. Because as we see, that's going to be a critical factor in how this story resolves. The interruption also helps build the dramatic tension. It's a storytelling device. It gets us, you know, leaning on the edge of our seats. Will Jesus arrive in time to save Jairus' daughter? But I think the most important thing is because these two stories share a common theme. And Mark is trying to make sure we don't miss it. As we go through this, I think that's going to become clear. So here we have a sick woman who reaches out her hand to touch Jesus. And we're told this woman had been suffering from a hemorrhage for 12 years. Now, most likely, this was some kind of uterine bleeding, okay? And according to Jewish law, all the way back in Leviticus chapter 15, this condition would have rendered her ceremonially unclean. What that means is she would have been prohibited from entering the temple to worship God and offer sacrifices. Because if you had any kind of issue coming from your body, you could not come to worship until that was gone. And you went through a process of purification. For 12 years, she had been blocked from worshiping God at the temple. More than likely, this also prevented her from coming into the synagogue to seek God there as well. Think about that. This is a woman who probably desperately wanted a touch from God, but according to the rules of her culture, the door was closed to her. Her social interaction would have also been affected because they believe that this kind of uncleanliness could be transferred to other people. And so it's kind of like, you know, thinking, she's got cooties. I don't want any of that. Stay away from me, woman. I'm on my way to church. Today we can see, you know, there's pretty good public health reasons behind that, considering the level of hygiene they had available to them. But in their culture, they saw it as some kind of spiritual condition that kept people from approaching a holy God. Interestingly, her condition had persisted for the same number of years that Jairus' daughter had been alive. That's Mark telling us, pay attention. He does another way of doing that here in a little bit. For years, this woman had suffered through humiliating and ineffective treatments. You ever been there? Trying to get over a condition. Now, some of us have been dealing with a respiratory thing for a few weeks now. It sounds like it never wants to leave. You know, and you try this and try that and go there and do this and nothing helps. This woman had been trying that for 12 years. In the Greek text, Mark actually stresses the woman's suffering. Pola pathosu hupo polon yatron. Okay, literally what that means is much she had suffered under many physicians. And the word there, Mark actually uses the same Greek word there to translate much and many. just different forms of it. So he's stressing just how much suffering this woman had been through over 12 years. According to the rabbinic records that we have from that time period, here are some of the cures that would have been attempted more than likely in her behalf. One authority suggested drinking a goblet of wine mixed with rubber, alum, and garden crocuses. And you think that stuff that make you drink for a colonoscopy is awful. Somebody else said, well, no, what you need to do is eat Persian onions cooked in wine while the physician chants, arise out of your flow of blood. It's more like a magic trick. Then again, nobody, you know, you might be cleansed, but nobody's going to be around you because of your breath. Other physicians prescribed a sudden shock. You know how when somebody's got the hiccups, and you sneak up behind them and go, boo! How's that supposed to work? Somebody else said, well, what the patient has to do is carry around the ashes of an ostrich egg and a special cloth. You know, that's the level of medical technology in the first century, okay? And Mark tells us, as we can pretty much predict, the effects of those treatments had been negative. In fact, they had ruined her financially. Because all these guys, all these quacks would charge a premium for their services up front. The treatments had not helped her condition in the least. In fact, her condition had actually grown worse. She is desperate. And in her desperation, she decided to reach out to Jesus. And she did this secretly. Because, you know, for her to touch a holy man like Jesus might make him unholy, unclean. She probably sneaks into the crowd. You know, this jostle of people, if they had known she was there and who she was, they might have torn her apart. She's probably got her head covered so nobody recognizes her. And she says, if I can just reach up and just touch the hem of his cloak, not even him, just his clothes, then I'll be healed. Think about that. I mean, that's more like superstitious thinking than genuine faith. It's not like some way sometimes people treat me. You know, people want me to come to the hospital and pray for them. They refuse to go under the knife till the preacher gets there. It's like I'm their lucky rabbit's foot, you know? I'll come pray for anybody that asks, but you know, crowd this size, obviously, I can't be everywhere at the same time. And what happens if I'm sick? Okay, very thankfully, we've got deacons and Sunday school teachers and other folks who help carry that load, and I really appreciate that. And I don't mind coming to pray for people. It's just, folks, just because I show up doesn't mean that you're going to get well that much faster. Don't put your faith in me. Put it in the Lord. But she thinks, man, if I just touch his cloak, that's all that's going to matter. It's just like superstition, okay? And yet, even though her faith was far from perfect, it's in the right person. Jesus actually responds to this woman's imperfect faith. Mark tells us that when the woman touched Jesus, immediately she was healed. Mark also tells us that immediately Jesus knew something had happened. Now, people have argued for centuries over exactly what Mark meant when he said, perceiving in himself that the power proceeding from him had gone forth. What does that mean? Well, your guess is probably as good as mine, okay? Now, we do know from other scriptures that when the Son of God took on human flesh, he temporarily set aside some of his divine prerogatives, like Paul talks about in Philippians chapter 2, verses 5 through 8. But I think, this is my opinion, I think personally Jesus knew more about the situation than he was letting on here. Because by demanding that this woman step forward, he was forcing her to take a public stand. His disciples thought he was nuts. He turns around and says, who touched me? And they're like, dude, everybody's touching you. What are you talking about? Come on, we got to hurry. Little girl waiting, 911, right? Who touched me? He stops it right there. And this woman knows the gig is up. Jesus knew, and the woman knew. And she knew that she had reached out to Jesus. She also knew that when she did, she was made whole. And she knew Jesus was the reason. See, she may not have understood how all this worked, but something had happened. And Jesus was the cause. This woman who had spent nearly 12 years trying to avoid the scrutiny of the crowd, all of a sudden is thrust into the center of it. Like Jairus, what does she do? She throws herself at Jesus' feet. She tells Jesus the whole story. And what does Jesus do? Woman, don't you know you could have ruined my ministry? Woman, don't you know I'm on my way to help a little girl who's dying? And you're slowing me down here. I mean, time is of the essence. You see all these people? Don't you know what you've done here? No. I see Jesus reaching his hand out to her and accepting her. Because he looks at her and he, listen what he calls her. Daughter. Daughter. He is showing her compassion and acceptance. By the way, calling her daughter, that also ties him to something else going on here, right? See, Mark's trying to say, hey, these two stories, they're connected. He clarifies that it was not the touching of his robes that made her well. It was her faith in him that did so. Now, her faith may have been expressed in an imperfect, superstitious way, but it has still been expressed towards Jesus. This is the reason the Apostle Paul could say in Philippians chapter 1 that even though some people around him were preaching Christ from impure motives, he rejoiced that Christ was being preached. People say to me, hey, why are we having anything to do with this group over here or that group over there? You know, what about this teacher here? Don't they have a couple of funny ideas and stuff like that? My question is, hey, are they preaching Jesus? Are they preaching Jesus? Why do we sing this song or that song or do things this way? Is it putting the spotlight on Jesus? Is it telling the gospel? That's the important thing right there. It's not so much about the quality of our faith as it is who our faith is in. And trust me, I'm as big on protecting doctrine as the next person. Okay? To me, that's something that's very, very important. But to me, the most important thing is, can we agree on Jesus? As a result of reaching out to Jesus, this woman not only experiences healing, she experiences wholeness. He says, go in peace. Now, in Jewish thought, the idea of peace is not just the cessation of conflict, okay? The word here in Mark's gospel is the word irene. That is actually probably a translation of the Hebrew word shalom, because we are talking about Jewish people here. And shalom is more than just the cessation of conflict. It is the restoring of what is broken. It is the making complete what is missing. The biggest problem in her life was not her illness. It was the distance between her and God. And Jesus says, because of your faith, go in peace. That has been restored. Even if her body had not been healed, she still would have received something much more important, peace with God. Because, you know, sometimes Jesus doesn't answer our prayers the way we necessarily expected. Bodies aren't always healed. Dead people aren't always raised. But Jesus is always faithful. Now, even if your faith is less than perfect, reach out to Jesus and trust him to bring the broken pieces back together. And finally, Jesus not only hears the desperate, not only does he respond to an imperfect faith, he also brings hope to hopeless situations. So while this interruption is taking place, you can imagine Jairus is getting a little impatient, right? Picking back up in verse 35, while he was speaking, they came from the house of the synagogue official saying, your daughter has died. Why trouble the teacher anymore? But Jesus, overhearing what was being spoken, said to the synagogue official, do not be afraid any longer, only believe. He allowed no one to accompany him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. And they came to the house of the synagogue official, and he saw a commotion and people loudly weeping and wailing. And entering in, he said to them, why make a commotion and weep? The child's not died, she's asleep. They began laughing at him, but putting them all out, he took along the child's father and mother and his own companions and entered the room where the child was. Taking the child by the hand, he said to her, Talitha cum, which translated means, little girl, I say to you, get up. Immediately the girl got up and began to walk, for she was 12 years old. And immediately they were completely astounded. And he gave them strict orders that no one should know about this, and that he said that something should be given to her to eat. So they're on their way. They get interrupted. Jairus is probably starting to fret here. Hey, you know, time is running out. Time is of the essence. And sure enough, while Jesus is speaking to this newly healed woman, messengers show up and say, forget it. Cancel. Too late. She's dead. Note the finality and the futility expressed in the message. Essentially, they're saying, don't bother. It's too late. There is no hope. Not even Jesus can help you now. Of course, that's just like the world, isn't it? Not even Jesus can help you now. But look at Jesus in contrast. He looks at Jairus and says, hey, don't be afraid. Trust me. The implication is Jairus was already starting to get a little fearful here. Jesus says, no, believe. Trust me, Jairus, let's go. This was not an invitation to wishful thinking, okay? He's not just saying, have faith. That's what we do so often. Somebody's in a jam, you say, hey, just got to have faith. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Because faith doesn't hang out in the air just by itself, okay? In order for faith to have meaning, it has to have the right object. What Jesus is saying here is not just believe, he's saying believe in me. Jairus, do you trust me? Take my word for it. Come on, let's go. So you got to have the right object. The invitation is to demonstrate trust in Jesus. And we demonstrate our trust in Jesus by following him and obeying his instructions. So Jairus continued to lead Jesus to his house. And Jesus gets there and he challenges the unbelief in the crowd, because there's always a crowd of unbelievers around, naysayers and mockers. And when the party arrives at Jesus' house, they find this mourning well underway. And against the hopelessness of that crowd, Jesus proclaims, there is still hope. And what do? They laugh at him. Jesus says, hey, she's only asleep. Now, early Christians began to refer to death by that term, death as sleep. Now, it wasn't mean they were saying, you know, when you go to sleep, it's like losing consciousness. That's not quite what they meant. What they meant was, like sleep, for the Christian, death is only temporary. Because the expectation is when you go to sleep, you're going to wake up, right? He said, hey, she's going to wake up. And they laugh at him. They mock. They don't believe it. So Jesus proceeds then to do, again, what only God can do. He chases out the mockers. He takes the dead girl by the hand and he says to her, little girl, time to get up. And against all hope, she did. To the amazement of everyone in that room except Jesus. Where are you being tempted today to give up hope? Where are you giving up hope today? Trust in Jesus. Don't be afraid. Where is Jesus taking you by the hand and telling you, time to get up and walk by faith? What do these stories teach us? Well, first of all, they teach us that through Jesus, we have access to a God who hears and responds. This also teaches that through Jesus, God even responds to an imperfect faith. You don't have to understand how it works. You don't have to be an expert. You just got to reach out and trust him. Through Jesus, God is able to bring hope into hopeless situations. And don't put your faith in the outcome. Put your faith in Jesus. Because sometimes, you know, he's got access to a whole lot more knowledge than we do. He knows what his plans are. Sometimes the outcome we're looking for may not be the best outcome. Do we trust him enough to accept that and to keep walking in faith? Jesus, as we sang earlier, he is the way maker. He is the miracle worker. He is the promise keeper. He is our God. Have faith.
This program is a production of the Media Ministry at New Salem Baptist Church. Music courtesy of Jason Shaw at audionautix.com. If you enjoy this program, we would love to hear from you. Email us at info@newsalembaptist.net. Thank you for listening.